Thank you to Rula and Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Liz is a mother and survivor from New York. When she was 14 years old, the police launched an investigation with her next-door neighbor as the subject because they suspected he had a nefarious plan to groom and likely abuse Liz. After several months navigating an eye-opening, life-changing criminal justice process, Liz was left to heal largely on her own as her freshman year of high school ended. In this episode, Liz shares her poignant perspective of what it means to be a survivor and the reality of healing from adolescent trauma in adulthood. The Broken Cycle Media team is so grateful for her time, energy, and desire to help others by sharing her story.
My name is Liz. I am 30 years old and I am from upstate New York. I am a single mom to a sweet little boy. Growing up, I had, I guess, a semi-normal childhood. I lived with my grandparents pretty much my entire life from ages 8 until I graduated high school. My mom lived with us too. My parents were separated. We lived in a typical middle-class suburban neighborhood and it was the place where it felt like nothing ever happened. Or nothing ever went wrong really in this town that could be seen. And we quickly learned that that's not the case. It was a very tight-knit community. Everybody was at the football games every Friday. Word also spread very quickly. Everybody kind of knew what was going on with everybody at the same time. Growing up, before everything, most people define me as very social, tomboy, into sports. I've always been the social butterfly. I went to a huge high school and my graduating class was about 800 kids. So it was very divided up in some ways. And I was able to just bounce around and be the girl that was kind of friends with everybody. Growing up, I wanted to be a psych nurse or a comedian. And then as I entered high school, I really wanted to become a detective or an investigator. I had a really great family and an amazing friend group in high school, even better friend group now that I've gotten older that really helped me get through everything. My best friend, Emma, she has been with me since the beginning of everything. I met her when she moved into my neighborhood the summer going into eighth grade. So that was 2009, 2010. She lived about 5 or 6 houses down from me. She ended up becoming my best friend literally in the entire world. We would go through each other's closets. Her parents didn't know that she had a Facebook and I had a Facebook. So we would like sneak on her computer. It was talking about boys we went to school with. We would go to the mall a lot. We went on runs a lot because we lived right down the street from each other. Laying out with half a bottle of Sun-In in our hair. Being typical like teenage girls. Our neighborhood would have these block parties where everybody would get together, bring food, they would drink, and everybody was always invited. There was a good amount of kids that would come to them. I was the oldest girl that was there. My neighbor, I noticed that he would sit and always try to engage in small talk with me and not really any of the other kids. And it never felt wrong. It never felt weird. I thought it was just neighbor being friendly. He wasn't very social. He didn't really talk to anybody at the parties. He would just sit and bring his dog. I remember that he would just really only gravitate towards me, but I just assumed that it was because I was older and there really wasn't many other kids to have conversations with. And then middle of September of 2011, Emma and I were on a walk, and we always did this thing where we would walk each other halfway to our house and then turn around and go back home. And for some reason, Emma kept walking me to my house. I think it was she wanted to borrow something out of my closet. As we were on the walk, my neighbor was walking his dog, and he took the tennis ball that he had in his hand for his dog and he threw it toward Emma and I, and his dog started running towards us. He stopped and asked how school was going. He asked how old we were now and what grade we were in. And then he asked me if I was ready to learn how to drive. And I was like, I'm 14. I can't learn how to drive yet. That's against the law. And he's like, oh, well, I guess I can just wait a couple years, or I could secretly teach you how to drive. We don't have to leave the neighborhood. And he asked me for my phone number to text him. And I gave him a fake number because I knew right off the bat, this is weird. We ran back to my mom's house and we told my mom everything that happened. And she was like, well, that was weird, but at least you gave him a fake number. He had never done anything to come off as creepy. So we took it as in maybe he was just trying to be nice and he didn't realize the social inappropriateness of it. And then the next day I came home from school and my mom asked me to come into her room, and he had left a voicemail on the house machine, which is ballsy to do because everybody in my family could hear the messages that he recorded. He said, I see you gave me a fake number. You don't need to be scared. I'm sorry. He must have gotten the phone number through the phone book, which is crazy that phone books were even a thing that just gave out everybody's information. But my mom was like, if he does it again, then we'll say something. Sure as shit, the next day, I come home and my mom looks frantic and he had left another voicemail. He was telling me to not be scared. And he's like, don't be scared of me. There's nothing to be afraid of. We recorded that and we didn't know what we could do with it because we had a feeling there's technically nothing that they could do about it. And then the next day, he left a voicemail mentioning something that I had been wearing when I was walking to school. So at this point, we kind of knew that he was looking at me, or at least had watched me walk to the bus stop that day. Between him approaching Emma and I and the last voicemail, it was all collectively over 3 days. I was scared. I was terrified. I was very confused as to why this is happening now. How long has this been going on? And that's when my family decided that we needed to bring it to the police station. So me and my mom, we got to the police station and the person that opened the door was actually one of my middle school friend's dad. And I knew he was a police officer. I didn't know that he was at that particular building. And he looked at me, he's like, what are you doing here? My mom was like, we need to talk to somebody, like something is wrong. So they brought us back into this room. My mom had recorded the voicemails on her cell phone. She started playing them for the investigators. I remember them saying the fact that he's willing to leave these messages on a platform where my grandfather, who had worked in law enforcement for a very long time, could have access to hear them. He wasn't trying to be private about it. 14-year-olds in general really weren't checking voicemails when they got home on the house phone because we all had cell phones by then. They took it as in it was very bold, and it's very obvious that 3 days in a row, there's a good chance he's going to try to pursue something. I think also putting into consideration how close he was, front door to front door, literally the only thing separating our house was the road. He was directly across the street, and that's what was also concerning. They gave us the option of we can either go to his house and tell him that he's being inappropriate and that my family would like him to stop. They said sometimes that doesn't end well. It can encourage retaliation. They decided the best option was to have a female investigator reach out to him pretending to be me.
Thank you again to Rula for sponsoring this episode. I've made it no secret that talk therapy is my number one suggested resource for healing, whether it was after my divorce, my mom's murder, or just during my day-to-day care. Therapy has been my go-to method of self-care for quite a long time. However, I'm also the first person to talk about the difficult realities of finding the right therapist. Whether it's location, modality, or insurance availability, finding the right therapist can be one of the biggest hurdles in getting mental health care. However, Rula does things differently. By partnering with over 100 insurance plans, making the average copay just $15 per session. But depending on your benefits, your copay could be as little as $0 per session. That's real therapy from licensed professionals at a price that actually makes sense. Other online therapy platforms might match you with the first available provider and don't really work to determine if they're the right fit or not. Rula considers your goals, preferences, and background to provide you a curated list of licensed in-network therapists who are actually aligned with what you need. Plus, Rula sticks with you throughout your journey, checking in to make sure your care is helping you move forward. Go to Rula.com/WCN to get started today. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. Visit Rula.com/WCN to get started. That's RULA.com/WCN. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget.
They decided the best option was to have a female investigator reach out to him pretending to be me through phone call, email, and text messages. And the next day, I received a text message from the investigator. Her first name was Mary. She said that we're starting the investigation. I'm going to reach out to you tomorrow with some guidelines that we're going to need you to follow moving forward. The main focus of the investigation was to see what his intentions were and how far he was planning on going, essentially. I got a text message from Detective Mary, and she goes, "Do you mind calling me so I can ask you some questions about yourself, just so there's nothing that will throw him off?" And I remember her calling, asking me to speak slowly and fast so that way she could try to sound like me as much as she could over the phone. She asked me about descriptions of myself, how tall I was, my hair color, how I typically dressed. The investigator, Mary, was taking on my identity through communication with my neighbor. I remember her apologizing and being like, "We hope that we can take care of this as soon as possible. But just so you know, moving forward, if you plan on doing anything outside of the house, you need to contact me first." And that was something as simple as taking the trash out. My parents were separated. My dad had us every other weekend. So something as simple as letting her know what the schedule was of us being at our dad's. Are we going to be leaving early? What time? My dad lived about 45 minutes north of us. I had to let them know my dad's going to be here in 5 minutes. I would text her and be like, "I just got off the exit, which means I'm about 6 minutes away from home." I had to have permission to pretty much do everything. It felt like for a while. I remember being so scared my first year of high school was going to be ruined. I think that was just a typical like teenage thought process of, I finally got to high school. I was afraid that my life was just going to be on hold. It made me feel so trapped. I've always been a pretty independent person, and I've always been a very much extrovert. I was a typical teenager. I was like, home was boring. My friends are down the street. It was horrible because I remember wanting to do things with my friends, planning things last minute and texting them, "I might go and do this." And it was like, "We have to know if you're going to do something or not." And then I would just be like, "No, I'm not going to do it." I remember I was dating somebody who played football, and I was wearing his jersey to school. I had it as I was walking to the bus stop. He saw me wear it and texted the investigator asking if I was going to be at the football game that night. He said that he wanted to go and he wanted to take the family, and then he wanted to see me. I remember I just didn't go to the game. It was either homecoming or it was a bigger game. it literally made me feel like I didn't have a life outside of texting this investigator. I felt like the mime trapped in the box. I can't speak and can only just stay inside that one spot.
You're not even speaking for yourself. Someone else is assuming your identity and speaking for you.
Very much so. And it felt like I was trapped to my phone and the four walls of my house. Also, while feeling like I'm being watched at the same time, there was that constant feeling like there were eyes on me, even in the privacy of my own room. And I think that's when it really started to hit me that this is more than what you thought it was going to be. I had no idea how to regulate my own emotions and everything yet still. And then on top of it, now I have this extremely uncommon event now occurring in my life. It just felt like a lot was being thrown in to life at the same time. I had a constant fear of fucking up this investigation and ruining it. There was one time my dad called. He asked me to meet him outside. Not even thinking of it, I went outside to go meet him at his car. I was there for maybe 2 minutes. And I looked down at my phone and Mary is calling me. And I answered the phone. She's like, I'm on the phone with him right now. I need you to get back in the house. He's wondering why you're outside. I remember turning to my dad and telling my dad, oh, I got to take this phone call, and running back inside and having like such a panic that I just messed that whole thing up. We were also told around that same time to keep an eye out for a FedEx truck. He was ordering pornographic materials that he had planned on sending to me or describing to me, which I didn't know at the time, but we later learned that he was waiting for a package because that package was eventually supposed to be directed towards me. After he received that package, we were told that they were going to be trying to pursue an arrest soon. So December 1st, my mom got a phone call and the police had asked my mom if they would allow me to stay home from school tomorrow. My mom said yes, and they said, just make sure that she can't really be seen from outside the house. I remember sitting in a room, curtains shut. I was probably binge watching The Office or something for hours, full anxiety, having no idea what was going on. My grandmother and my grandfather were home with me, and we were told for my grandmother and I to get in a car and drive off. And so we drove about 5-10 minutes down the street, and then we parked on the side of this neighborhood and we just sat there. I vividly remember my grandma bringing a book and me having nothing to entertain myself. About 25-30 minutes later, we got a text that we could return back home. A few hours later, it was nighttime. There was a knock at the door and it was the county sheriff. They had told us that he was arrested. He was arrested at a local mall because he had the intent of meeting up with me and plans to take us to a motel. I remember the one sheriff being like, you guys haven't looked outside your windows yet? And we're like, no, you were told to like not let me be seen. And we looked out the windows and his entire house was being raided. There was multiple police cars, multiple police vans, people in suits walking out with boxes of material, and his girlfriend standing in the driveway crying because she had absolutely no idea what was going on. And so December 1st of 2011 is when the investigation officially ended. They said that he's going to have multiple charges and that they're assuming after they're done searching the house that there's probably going to be more charges added on top of the stalking and the intent of meeting with a minor. I had to sign a form. My first legal document that I've ever signed in my entire life was me signing that we were pressing charges. I remember signing that and having really no idea what exactly I was signing. I remember it was like a breath of fresh air at first. This is over and I can have a normal life. I remember texting Emma that he was arrested. I had a boyfriend at the time, and I remember texting him that it was over. A lot of my friends didn't really know the depth of it because I didn't really know what to tell them other than my neighbor was watching me and there was an investigator pretending to be me. I remember feeling relief. And then the next day, I was just like sent to school. And I don't know if my parents did it to try to make me feel normalcy. I don't know if they did it because they didn't know what to do. But I remember being sent into school with the worst anxiety. I couldn't focus on anything. I had the worst brain fog. I learned that my teachers had all been informed of everything that happened. So I had teachers pulling me outside of the class to apologize. One teacher, he cried to me. When he was arrested, They gave his address in the newspaper and in the police report. And they mentioned that it was a minor and it was a neighbor. I remember people finding out very quickly that it was me, or people questioning my parents and my parents having to be like, it was Liz. But I remember feeling very lost and confused after he was arrested, because I also felt very, very guilty, even though I wasn't the reason that he was being sent to jail. I remember feeling so guilty that this man is going to jail. And I think it's because I didn't know the severity and the explicitness of what he was doing. So when the house was raided, they found hundreds of photos that he had taken of me over the course of 6 months. So before he had even approached me, our neighbor had a pool. There's pictures of me walking from my house to his house in a bathing suit, pictures of me walking to and from the school bus, playing outside, sitting on my driveway tanning. He had pasted my face onto pornographic magazines. In his car when he was arrested, they found condoms, Viagra, pornography, rope, and they found tape as well in the car. They couldn't say that he didn't have an intent to harm me after. They think the ropes may have been more for his own sexual purposes. My family was 100% convinced that when he was planning on meeting me at the hotel, that that was most likely going to be one of the last times that they saw me.
Thank you again to Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode. By now, you have heard me shout my love for Lola Blankets from the rooftops for months, but I don't think I'm ever gonna stop. Because from the moment we received our first Lola Blanket package, which was a large blanket in Shoreline, it became our new favorite household item. And in a house full of homebodies, that's a coveted title. And when I realized our Lola blanket was the most sought after item in our home, even by the cats, that's when I realized Lola blankets were the perfect gift for virtually any occasion. New babies, new homes, retirements, and everything in between. That's because Lola is the world's number one blanket, crafted with ultra soft luxury faux fur and a signature four-way stretch that people instantly obsess over the second they touch it. Plus, what makes it better is that it's machine washable, double hemmed, and built to last for years, making it a truly meaningful, long-lasting gift. And with every wash, it still stays flawless. No shedding, no pilling, no delicate care worries, which makes it a gift people can actually enjoy and use and take care of every day. A Lola isn't just a blanket. It's a home upgrade gift. And for a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola Blanket products with code WCN at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code WCN. After you make your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and let them know that What Came Next sent you. Wrap yourself in luxury with Lola Blankets.
Originally, he had 8 charges, and he pled guilty to 3 of them. It was 3 counts of attempting to send indecent material to a minor, and those were the 3 that he pled guilty to. Also, a charge of endangering the welfare of a child, stalking, and attempting to engage in sexual acts with a minor. But I believe those were dropped. February 22nd of 2012 is when he did the plea deal, and they requested that I write a victim impact statement. I had 2 really amazing teachers who sat down with me and wrote my victim impact statement. I was given the option of going to court and reading that victim impact statement. And I remember my mom strongly being against me doing it. I remember being very mad at her for that for a little bit and not understanding, why aren't you going to let me speak up on my behalf and speak for myself? But really, she didn't want him to have the gratification of seeing me again. I understand it now, but I remember as a teenager, I was very upset about that. And I held on to that anger about that for a very long time. In April of 2012, he was ultimately sentenced to 5 years in prison with 10 years post-release supervision, and then has to be registered on the sex offender registry for the rest of his life. It completely consumed my entire freshman year of high school. Because even after the fact of it ending, by then word had gotten out It was out in the public and a small big town where nothing ever happened. Suddenly something was happening. There was one or two kids that made comments to me saying that, like, I'm not actually a victim because nothing actually ever happened to me. That mentality lasted with me for so long. Well, nothing did happen to me. So why is this man in jail? There was like one or two kids that made jokes and they were like, oh, you were probably actually just talking to him. I remember it was just never talked about. It was never really brought up in our home. And it wasn't something that I told everybody about. I was afraid people would look at me different. So I don't think my parents really necessarily thought we should send her to therapy. I think their thought process was, when she's ready to go, she'll tell us. But as a child, I can't make those decisions. I remember just trying to force myself to live as much of a normal life as possible. I would act out every now and then. That kind of all started the end of my freshman year and trying to like make up for all of that time that I had felt trapped. I was definitely trying to mask my own emotions. This, if you fake it till you make it mentality. My mid-20s is when I started to actually feel like, you fucking survived this. I had my son when I was 23 and I watched my best friend have two little girls. I just remember being like, this is something that nobody should ever go through. And I remember telling my son's father about it and him being like, you went through the ringer. You should know that you survived something. This isn't a normal thing that happens. This is a horrifying, terrible thing that happened to you. You should be very happy that you are here to tell that story. As I got older and I started speaking up more about it and people giving me the reassurance that this was a big thing that you went through and you survived, I think that was really the turning point for me.
Absolutely. Talk to us about what tools and resources have really helped you continue that healing.
I have the most amazing therapist in the entire world. I remember I walked into her office and I was like, I have some childhood trauma that I want to take care of. I told her about it and she was like, that's not mild childhood trauma. This is something that is very significant. Being able to be comfortable to talk to other people about it and realizing that you're not the only one who's ever been through this. Your story is going to be different. Nobody's going to have the same story, but you're not the only one who has survived this. Really, my biggest outlet was just being comfortable with being open about talking about it. I was always afraid that if I told people my story, people would be like, oh, she's telling it for attention. And it's not attention, but it's for other people to be more attentive of the world around them. The more you speak up, the more can be done to prevent things like this from happening again. Really learning, doing my own research on survivors and finding groups. I'm in this group on Facebook and it's women who are victims of stalking. And it's everywhere from domestic violence stalking to neighbor stalking, really just finding out sources, outlets, having a good community. Surround yourself with people that make you feel like you're cared for and you're loved for. Don't wait to speak, especially being so young. I wish that I had taken the opportunity as soon as I could, or was given the opportunity as soon as I could to get help, because I didn't know that I needed it until I was at a breaking point. One big thing that I found helped me was I stopped researching it. I would check his sex offender registry every 6 months to make sure that his address didn't change. I had his car and license plate memorized, and I found that constantly doing that was not helping me. It was putting me in more fear than it was helping me. And that's different for everybody, but allowing myself to keep putting myself in situations that I was more fearful, part of me was like, I'm letting him win. I didn't want to be in fear anymore. I wanted to feel like I was thriving and moving on and that I was actually the bigger person than he was. In April of 2026, I was sitting in my parking lot getting ready to go to the school that I work at. I was just sitting on Facebook and all of a sudden his face popped up on my Facebook. And that was the biggest jump scare, immediate panic attack. We found out that in April, he was arrested in the town over from mine for attempting to rob a bank. They also mentioned that he was a registered sex offender and that he had been arrested in 2012 for the charges that he had. And it kind of surfaced for a little bit, a lot of the emotions. I had everybody that knew about it and knew his name sending me the articles. He was released on a release ticket. So not only was his face plastered everywhere, his story, but he wasn't even sent to jail. I think there's going to be a trial. I guess it's just a lesson never learned kind of situation. I'm biased when I say I wish he had never been released out of prison, but obviously not reformed if you're willing to commit these crimes.
What advice do you have for parents or people in support positions helping those navigating adolescent trauma?
I think the first thing, get your child help. You can't force them to do anything, but strongly encourage any child with any form of trauma to receive help. Reassure them they're not alone. Don't sweep it under the rug. Talk about it. Let them get their feelings and emotions out. If you are not sure what to do, reach out for other forms of support. Do everything you can to help them keep that youth and that innocence. And it's really important to make sure that they feel seen and they feel heard. They might not want to talk about it, but they need to. They might not want to go to therapy, but they should. I think a lot of people assume that once the crime is done or the perpetrator's in jail, that everything's okay. And it's usually the opposite. It's usually worse after because now everybody's allowed to feel all their feelings. Let your kids feel their feelings. They might be enraged. They might be upset. They might act out. Don't encourage the behavior, but let them feel how they want to feel. Love them. As terrifying as this world may be, just try to give them the reassurance that it's still a beautiful place. One of the biggest things of advice that I could give is if something feels wrong, speak up. I feel like if my mom hadn't gone to the police that soon, because I remember we walked into the police station and they very much were like, there's not really much we can do. But my mom was like, well, you need to do something. Your gut knows more than you think it does. And follow your gut. And if something doesn't feel right, then speak up on it.
What do you wish everyone knew about stalking?
I think the common misconception of stalking is people think of stalking and they think of somebody looking through your windows. They're showing up to your work. They're following you home. And I think stalking has so many different levels, especially now with like social media. It's not just staring at somebody. It's consuming somebody's everyday life. His world revolved around me. His schedule revolved around my schedule. He knew what I was doing and he knew exactly what time I was going to get dropped off on the bus and walk home. I think that's more terrifying than anything else.
Thank you so much for all of your time and energy today. Thank you for putting yourself out there and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for letting me share my story. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
These were all starting to snowball. The fighting was getting worse. Paige was getting angrier and more violent. It seemed like there was always a knife being grabbed and pointed at the boyfriend or my mother. I remember talking to mom on the phone and I told her, I don't want to get that phone call one day and the police telling me that she's killed you.
Thank you again to Rula and Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget that thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. And you can too. Just visit rula.com/WCN to get started. That's rula.com/WCN. And for a limited time, don't forget our listeners can get 40% off select Lola Blankets products with code WCN at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code WCN.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.